Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. Hi and welcome. I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. We're live again today at the blessings and the help of my producer, Mary Lou Cook. Today we'll be talking with an author and certified health coach about food cravings, food issues, and positive ways to combat this and develop what is called mindful eating. Lisa Lutan is a healthy living strategist and founder of Healthy, Happy, and Hip, which provides one-on-one coaching, workshops, retreats, and support groups for clients. Her new book, Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed, provides tools to help highly successful superwomen slow down, chill out, develop a better relationship with food, and feel great. Her articles have been featured in numerous publications, including The Huffington Post, Better After 50, and Mind Body Green. So welcome, Lisa.
Oh, welcome, Sima. So nice to be here.
So happy to have you. I'm anything mindful is right up my alley. So first tell me a little bit about your journey to your present career, your personal struggles, and your passion about this issue.
Well, I started off many years ago, actually, in tech. I was a tech entrepreneur in my 20s, way before it was cool to be a tech entrepreneur. And over those years, I really didn't take care of myself. I was working crazy hours. I was eating Ben and Jerry's ice cream for dinner and really not listening to my body at all, which was screaming, help, help, help. And so in my early 30s, after I'd had the first couple of kids and moved into a house, I literally collapsed one day. And it was terrifying. It was just something that me being this organized, uber competent person was not expecting in any way, shape, or form. And it really forced me to say, hey, things aren't working the way they are. And when doctors couldn't give me answers to what was going on, I had to really take matters into my own hands and began a 20-year investigative look into healthy living and what did it take to be a healthy person. And that's where that journey has taken me. Years later, I went back to school, I studied holistic nutrition, and now I help others figure out what their body needs to be healthy.
And is the term mindful eating your term?
No, mindful eating is actually a big term out there right now. It comes from the whole issue of mindfulness, and which is really being where we are, instead of being out there thinking about a million other things. And so the whole thing around mindful eating is to really be present when we're eating.
So let's talk a little bit more about mindful eating. I'm assuming it's eating without distractions. I'm assuming there are certain techniques or tips you tell people. Tell me a little bit more about how it looks when you're educating someone.
So I like to look at mindful eating in a much more broad context than many other people do. And I think of it as a circle, and each layer moves out a little bit. So on the very beginning, it would be eating without distractions, meaning we're not going to eat while driving to work. We're not going to eat in front of the computer. We're not going to eat while reading a book. We're going to eat our food and actually look at it. So that would be the first step. Moving out in the circle, we would really look at our food and say, what is it that I'm eating? And what does it smell like? You know, what does it taste like? Where did this food even come from? How did it make it to my plate? And within that, we start bringing in this gratitude of all the work that went in to grow this food and prepare this food to make it end up on our plate. And then we take it a step further, and we can really focus on, you know, what does it taste like? Is it crunchy? Is it creamy? Is it spicy? Is it sweet? And just start noticing, do I even like it? You know, when we're eating so fast, we don't even have time to recognize if we even like the food or not. But when we start paying attention, we can start really noticing, whoa, I really do like that, or I don't. And then I like to take it out another level of mindful eating, and that is, who am I eating with? And what is around me? And am I actually present with the people I'm eating with, or am I looking at my phone? You know, am I thinking about something else when this beautiful person is sitting next to me? And so really looking at them and enjoying a meal with them. So as you can see, there are many aspects to this mindful eating. I tried to summarize it for you.
No, that's really great.
It's very broad.
You actually took me along for the ride, and I was pretending we were sitting next to each other eating. But the other question would be, for people for whom food isn't even really in their consciousness, they're running to McDonald's, they're getting fast food, they're shoving whatever they can find in their refrigerator or takeout, how would you help them? You know, the technique you just used would be great if you're eating whole and healthy food. But I don't know if it would work if you were going to McDonald's, would it? And how would you help somebody for whom they're not even in the wheelhouse of where you're hoping they would start from?
Well, I think we have to be careful not to mix up healthy eating with mindful eating. So you can eat McDonald's mindfully if that's what you choose to eat. I wouldn't recommend that as a healthy choice. But you certainly can eat and should eat any food that you eat mindfully, because you might notice that, oh, this tastes really great, but then afterwards I notice I have a little indigestion, or I notice that I'm sluggish, or I notice that I'm bloated, and all of that goes into this mindful awareness of our bodies. And so I think I would start exactly the same way. I have one client, all we worked on is that she wasn't going to eat in the car, because she was always on the go, and she was never tasting her food. She never felt that pleasurable experience of eating. So at the end of the day, when she collapsed, all she wanted to do was eat, eat, eat. And so the mindfulness helps us actually feel like we're eating, experiencing it. And then we can be done and move on with our day. Otherwise, we'll just keep reaching for food because we never felt like we ate.
And what would be some of the benchmarks for knowing that you're actually doing this process right?
I don't think there are real benchmarks. I think it's really something that, you know, it would be different for every person, and it would depend on their goals. But a few things, like for me, I really like to sometimes eat in silence, because I want to really look at my food and taste my food, and I find even the conversation of someone next to me is distracting. And usually I can only do that at breakfast, because that's the nature of my day. But I find it's a really pleasurable experience, you know, being there and looking at my food. I think benchmarks might be starting to notice if you're full, starting to notice what feels good, starting to pay attention to, do I even enjoy this food, or am I eating it because it's there? And so it's a whole investigative journey.
Mm-hmm. So food is a really powerful entity. It speaks to us on so many levels other than just filling us the way we would need nutritionally and otherwise. It sometimes is an obsession. It obviously does create issues or solve issues or bring about issues. And it is a metaphor for the very essence of our lives. So what is your take on this subject?
Well, I wrote a whole book on this subject.
Yes, you did.
So I think about this subject quite a bit. You know, I think that food is so much more than food, as you said, that, you know, let's say we need a best friend. Food's like, I'll be your best friend. You know, we need a confidant, we need a lover. Whatever that void is in our life, food will step up and say, I'm here, I'm going to help you out. And we do that. You know, we form coping mechanisms. And some people turn to food, some people turn to alcohol, some people turn to drugs. So as far as some of the alternatives, turning to food isn't such a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is causing you problems, and if it's, you know, if you're overweight, if you're feeling sluggish, if you're not feeling your best, then it is a problem.
Sure.
And you want to start finding ways to feel better. And when we take that focus off of what do I look like and shift it to how do I want to feel, everything starts moving in the right direction.
So when you're talking about feeling, a lot of people reach for certain foods because they have food cravings. How can someone tell whether the food craving reflects what their body needs, what their body doesn't need, such as an allergy, or what might be an obsession?
So I think that's a great question, and I like to break it down that we eat for three different reasons: hunger, habit, and trigger. So hunger is actually, you know, your stomach's growling, you haven't eaten in a while. I think many of us have lost the cues because we have food so available and we're snacking more than ever. And so you can ask yourself, you know, well, when's the last time I ate? What did I eat? Am I really hungry? What is it that I'm craving? You know, when you're craving a donut, you're probably not hungry. But if you're craving, you know, some salmon and broccoli, you might be hungry. I say mm-hmm. might, not definitely.
Mm-hmm.
A habit is something like, oh, every time I go to Cape Cod, I have to have an ice cream cone. And we start craving the ice cream cone. Or every time I drive past Dunkin' Donuts, I have to stop and get, you know, a donut. Some of these are Pavlovian, you know, and we just associate, oh, it's a holiday, I have to eat this. It's a this, I have to eat that. And that's a habit, just mm-hmm. like any other habit.
Mm-hmm.
And then triggers, I like to break down into two areas: emotional triggers and chemical triggers. And an emotional trigger in my book would be, oh, I'm so sad, I think I need to eat a cupcake. Or I'm so happy, I need to eat a cupcake. Or I'm so angry, I need to eat a cupcake. You know, whatever it is, it's tied with an emotional component to it.
Sure.
Whereas a chemical trigger literally is, we can't really control it. Certain things in our body are going to make us want to eat and eat and eat. And for example, I'm very sensitive to sugar, as are many, many people. And I'm not that person that can take that one little piece of dark chocolate and be happy. And I'm going to keep going back and back for more. And I know that that's a trigger for me. For some people, it might be the chips. For some people, it might be something else. But they really are, there's something going on in your body, and it's not about willpower. It really, really is a difficult trigger.
Can I circle this issue one more time? I don't have this experience, and so I'm wondering, when you have that dark chocolate, and you said you're not the kind of person that can leave it, you're going to go back for more, what exactly is that feeling?
It's a feeling like, is there any food that you have in your life that once you start, you just can't stop, or no?
You're going to laugh, but it's salad.
No, I don't laugh. I have the same thing, too. I mean, I have it with a lot of foods, healthy and non-healthy. But it's that feeling of, oh, I can't stop. You know, the person that has one glass of wine but has to keep going. Some people can't eat one chip. They keep eating, you know, till half the bag's gone or they feel sick. It's a feeling like, I want more, more, more. And, you know, it's most people that I speak to do have at least one thing like that. And it's not good or bad. It's just understanding yourself as an eater.
And so the other topic that I'm always talking about in so many different realms is the issue of inadequacy, shame, and negativity. We all carry around so much, and I'm guessing that this is just so heightened for people for whom food becomes an obsession. Would you agree?
I absolutely agree. I mean, we're all walking around with the I'm not good enough, I'm not thin enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not successful enough. We all have it. And there is a lot of shame around it. And so one of the first things I do when I work with people, I say, look, that's so not helpful. Let's just put on an investigative cap and look at this as data. It's not good, it's not bad, it's just all information. And I have a line, I always go, isn't that interesting? So isn't that interesting that I ate a whole box of cookies? Not, I'm horrible, you know, I ate those cookies. It's like, isn't that interesting that when I have salad, I want more salad? Or isn't that interesting that I can't eat one piece of chocolate? And so all of the, I try to get rid of the negativity around it and really just look at it as a problem that needs to be solved. And we make tremendous headway when we get the negativity out of it.
I really love that. That's talking about almost like mindfulness meditation when you have that objectivity about yourself. And in that realm, you can really come to understand yourself better, correct?
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing. It's as just like in meditation where we're observing our thoughts, it's the same thing. We're observing our behaviors and our patterns. And we're just looking at them without judging them.
We've been talking today with author and recovering food addict Lisa Lutan about the many aspects of food. She is the author of Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed. I think we'll be back after a short break, so stay tuned.
Are you going to eat that? Are you going to eat that? Are you going to eat that? Eat that.
We've been talking today with author and recovering food addict Lisa Lutan about the many aspects of food and the essence of mindful eating. Before we get to talking about midlife and menopause and perimenopause and how our bodies change, let's also talk about the aspect of superwoman. That is so prevalent for most of us, and I'm wondering where that fits in with your clientele and this issue.
Well, it certainly fits in because I come across so many super women, and it doesn't matter if they are working outside of the home or inside of the home. I think that women are putting so much pressure on themselves. And one could say, you know, where is this coming from? And sometimes it comes from family, sometimes it comes from societies, but I think it really comes back down to that thing we talked about before, the I'm not good enough. And we look at somebody else and go, wow, she's got it all together, you know, why can't I? And we never feel like we're adequate. And it's not just we have to be perfect wives and mothers and workers, and we have to look a certain way, and we have to have, you know, the perfect healthy meal on the table. It's just so much pressure these days.
Well, there is. And it's real, don't you think?
It's so real.
Yeah, it's very real.
It is so real, and I battle with that myself.
I do, too. So when we're talking about midlife and menopause and perimenopause, I'll speak for myself when I say that I never, ever had a weight issue. And now that I am in this menopausal stage, everything has changed. This becomes such a fertile place for the emergence or reemergence of these issues. Just everything about food, how it sits on us, how we wear it physiologically. Can you talk a little bit about that and some of the struggles you see in your clients?
Well, I think the truth is that you're probably one of the lucky ones that you didn't ever have a weight issue. I think many people have struggled with their weight all along. And so it's something I see across the board, and it's something I see even with people who don't have a weight issue. Like many of my clients are very thin, and they're still having the same struggles. It just doesn't show on the outside. But the truth of the matter is our metabolism is slowing down, not a drastic drop, but continually over the years. And we do have to eat cleaner and cleaner, you know, as we get through these perimenopausal and menopausal years, because our body is doing wacko crazy things and changing before our eyes. And, you know, we just can't tolerate certain foods the way we once could. And I come back to, we have to be investigators and really look at things. One of the programs that I offer is called Eat to Thrive, where we eliminate a bunch of highly inflammatory foods like gluten and dairy, soy, alcohol, sugar, just for a week. And then we bring them back. And what's amazing is I will hear people say, oh my God, I didn't realize dairy was making me bloat. I didn't realize gluten was making me foggy-brained. I didn't realize sugar was making me anxious. You know, there's so many connections and ahas that come about. And so we can start saying, okay, I want to feel better. I'm going to change my diet. And then over time, we start to see the effects on our body looking better because we're eating healthier.
But what happens to someone whose weight has increased during these times simply because of hormones, and therefore they must begin this investigative path toward what you just said? Is it gluten? Is it sugar? Is it dairy? That's a struggle sometimes.
It is sometimes, but the one thing I've heard again and again is that it's not as hard as they thought it would be. The reason that I designed a 7-day course as opposed to, like, there's programs out there that are 30 days is that after seven, everybody says, I can do anything for a week. And so after 7 days, they go, wow, that wasn't that hard. I feel so much better. I think I want to go a little bit longer. I think I am noticing things already. And so it takes the fear out of it. And it's not just taking away things. I really always stress adding things, you know, adding more wonderful fresh produce and adding more high quality protein and healthy yummy fats. And when we're adding the good stuff and taking away the not so good stuff, we really feel changes so quickly that it's a gift. It's not a deprivation thing.
So you're talking about the ways in which you help counsel your clients. We're talking about mindful eating. We're talking about keeping a 7-day register of sorts. What are some of the other methods that you suggest that people utilize with you to work through these issues?
Well, I'm a big believer in mindfulness and meditation in general, not just when it comes to food, because I think that when we can start slowing our body down and taking a breath, a pause, we can make better decisions in general.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be really just tuning inside and saying, what's going to satisfy me right now? Whether that's the right food, whether that's the right workout, whether that's the need to rest. And sometimes we just need to rest and to just be. And so one of the first things I really work on with everyone is breathing. And just taking a few deep breaths every day. It's amazing how many people just don't have time or make the time to do that. And so when people feel comfortable taking breaths, we might move on to a few more breaths. And then eventually we might make it to a meditation. But I try to meet people where they're at instead of forcing them to do something that's so out of their comfort zone.
I want to let you know that your voice is very soothing, and I am actually doing deep breathing as we speak.
So oh, thank you. I'm so happy to hear that. I actually literally yesterday created a 1-minute meditation audio
that.
File.
Oh, I love that.
But I'm happy to give your listeners if they want to email me. I haven't even posted it up yet.
That would be super.
I hear that quite a bit, and I am actually going to be teaching more meditation classes, and it's something that's so, so needed.
So what are some of the tips that you use to help people stay on track once they've started any of your methodologies?
Well, I think the first thing I'm going to say before I get to that is that don't beat yourself up if you fall off track, because we all do. It's very human. I certainly do all the time. And I don't believe it's how many times you get off track. It's just how many times you get back on. And so you don't have to be perfect. The key is you really want to eat. You want to be a food snob and eat the best quality food you can get your hands on. So if you can get your hands on, you know, a locally grown, organic, non-GMO vegetable, great, go for it. If you can't, you know, go buy frozen vegetables in your freezer. Like, do the best you can. it's okay. You know, there's so much pressure right now to be perfect as an eater, and I don't think that's necessary. I think that I don't like to look at foods as good and bad. I go more often and less often. And if you try to eat healthiest foods you can more often and then not so healthy foods less often, you're going to be in good shape.
We're running out of time here, and I'm wondering what one tip would you like to leave the listener with today?
My one favorite tip is just to take the pause. And before you put something in your mouth, you know, sit down and say, am I hungry for this? Is this the best quality food that I can eat? If I start eating this food, will I not be able to stop? And just really asking yourself questions so that you can make the decision in a sound mind, and therefore you don't end up beating yourself up afterwards, because that's totally counterproductive.
And the one other question would be, what other ancillary services do you send people to? Do you send them to therapists? Do you suggest they keep journals? You talked about the meditation aspect, but what other ancillary services?
Well, I think that it's very hard to be general with that. If someone needs a therapist, you know, I might recommend that. But if someone needs a doctor for blood work, that's something different too.
Sure.
But, you know, I really like to get to know somebody individually before making any recommendations. It's a very intimate, fun, exciting, interesting journey, figuring out, you know, you and you as an eater and as a liver and just trying to thrive.
We've been talking today with an author and recovering food addict, Lisa Lutan, about the aspects of food and the essence of mindful eating. She can be found at healthyhappyandhip.com. I do want to ask you again, your new book, Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed, is one way that people can get some tools. You're talking about your workshops. What else can you offer them?
Well, on my website, I have workshops. I do private coaching. I offer retreats. I have all sorts of things. And if they sign up for my newsletter on the front page of my website, healthyhappyandhip.com, they can stay on my mailing list and I can keep them up to date. I offer recipes. I offer lots of tips and tricks.
And one other question about utilizing a dietitian. Does that ever come into the forefront for you?
Using a dietitian?
Yes, recommending that.
No, because I find that most people I work with, they know what to do. They just have trouble doing it. And it's usually not a matter of knowledge. It's a matter of changing their lifestyle and understanding their patterns. I think that it's really worth it to take time to meet with somebody, not necessarily a dietitian, but somebody that you feel is aligned with you and what your goals are and what you're trying to achieve. We're all different, and we can't assume the same solution is going to work for every person. So taking the time to figure out your own particular needs is going to help you reach your desired goals.
We've been talking today again with author and recovering food addict Lisa Lutan about the aspects of food and the essence of mindful eating. Again, mindful eating, it's a wonderful phrase. She can be found at healthyhappyandhip.com. I want to thank you so much, Lisa, for joining me today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been great.
I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. I'm joined by my intrepid producer, my all-around media maven, my right-hand woman, Mary Lou Cook. Thank you to the listener for joining us, and until next time, I hope you take care.